Turner. What's the name of the song? Jason's classic cut on a Monday, Foreigner, Double Vision, 10:07. We have been discussing a recommendation today from the Academy of American Academy of Pediatrics that we need to push back the start of the school day because of a change in the circadian. Circadian rhythms. Had it right the first time. In mid-pubescent teens, where they can't help themselves. They actually can't get to sleep at night, so they need to be allowed to sleep later. I was about to weigh in with my opinion. We took a bunch of calls. But hold the phone, literally. Jackie Asa called in and says she is, if I pronounce this correctly, a polysomnographic technologist in English. She performs sleep studies. Is that correct, Jackie?
That is correct.
Well, we absolutely want to hear your opinion on this, then. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I've heard both sides, and I do agree that this is the way it's been, and that's the way I had to get up and go to school. But since I've been doing this job, every so often we have to attend continuing education seminars, and this was one of the big things they would be talking about, is the natural change in the sleep phase, starting about at puberty, adolescence, their natural shift to sleep is later at night and getting up later in the morning, which I'm sure many parents can attest to that, and teachers as well, being that when those children get to school, they aren't paying attention in class. Usually their first periods are suffering as far as grades, and it gets better as the day goes on. And also another thing that they spoke of is the athletics. In the late evening, soccer, all of this activity, strenuous activity, that also helps delay the sleep phase for really anyone, but that's usually when these children are partaking in those activities. And then they have dinner, then they have homework, and not to mention their electronic devices. The light that's emanated from those, again, stimulates the brain to stay up later. Now, some of those things are just parental issues that need to be taken care of. They can't be on their phones all night when they're supposed to be sleeping. But it is a natural shift, and then it usually ends about early college when they start to get back to what we call a normal phase. So in some cities, they have tried that, shifting the school to later, and they got supposedly great success with grades on some children who were not doing well. There was a lot of change in their performance at school.
Let me ask you this, and you might not have the answer. Let's accept that this rhythm shift is real science. Is there no other way to correct for it to get a child's routine changed? So once you get them up earlier, so you can't readjust, in other words, if you get the child into the cycle of waking up earlier and getting to bed earlier, you can't defeat this cycle?
Well, I think you could try, but I think it's going to be a fight, you know. I think as any adult, you know, that try to do that. They say there is a problem with adolescents getting a severe shift where they sleep all day, and that can be adjusted, definitely. So it probably could be, but I think just in the research, it's hard to fight that biology.
Jackie, thanks a lot for the call. But as an emailer put it earlier, we are told that a lot about teenagers. You just can't fight their biology. In other words, puberty is the unstoppable force. It's the ISIS of physiology, Jason. You can't stop a teen sexual drive. They're going to have sex. You can't stop it. You can't change this. Now, she actually, I thought, presented this as science pretty well. Here's what I would say. Okay, this shift might be real. I find it really hard to believe it can't be defeated. And the question that I said we need to be asking is this. Well, how have we survived this long without allowing teenagers to be on a different schedule than the rest of us? Well, they've been suffering this whole time. I believe there may be something to this science. I believe a larger element of this is rotten parenting. That's what I believe. Some of it maybe is. Some of it is kids staying up till 1, 2 in the morning, which my daughters have confessed to from time to time. And you know what my answer was? Sucks to be you this morning. Because me, I went to bed at 10 o'clock. And that's not counting falling asleep watching the news at 9 o'clock. I mean, when I actually got up, you know, my wife goes back. Okay, for example, my wife goes back and forth. Get up and go to bed. Or I wake up at 11:30 at night in the dark in the family room. You know, whatever she feels like on that particular evening. It's kind of the way it is. Maybe they are dealing with this. Deal being the operative word here. You got to deal with it. I dealt with it. My parents dealt with it before me. Their parents before them. I have a hard time believing that this is, again, puberty presents physiological challenges that we just cannot defeat. I want to completely switch gears now. There are two stories at the website of the Chicago Tribune today. The Chicago Tribune's website has two stories out of Chicago. This is one of them. City's weekend toll climbs as over a dozen shot late Sunday. This is Chicago. Now pay attention to this. At least 21 people were shot in Chicago in a 12-hour span starting early Sunday afternoon, according to authorities. Gunfire broke out on the north, south, and west sides in that stretch and claimed at least 3 lives while wounding at least 18. 3 dead, 18 wounded in a 12-hour shooting spree, if you will, in Chicago. That's a big story, right? And the Chicago Tribune has it on their website. It was not, though, the featured story as of this morning on their website. Guess what the featured story, the one big up on top, guess what that one was? 2 dead in separate police-involved shootings. Police-involved shootings on the west and south sides left 2 people dead Sunday evening. In the first shooting, gang enforcement officers responded about 6:30 p.m. Sunday to the 2800 block of West Polk Street in the Lawndale neighborhood on the west side after someone reported seeing armed men on the block. Here's what happened. The officers spotted people matching descriptions they'd been given. When officers approached, one of the people started running away. At least one officer gave chase, and as the person they were pursuing ran through a gangway, he produced a weapon and refused the officer's order to drop it. The offender then went to an elevated position and pointed the weapon in the direction of the officer, according to the statement. The officer had chased the man upstairs of a home. When the man pointed the gun at the officer fatally shot the man. Jason says, then you're going to die. Assuming the officer's depiction is accurate. In a separate shooting shortly before 9 p.m., rookie police officers on a foot patrol arrived in the 900 block of East 80th at East Chatham on the south side moments after 3 people were wounded in a shootout between 2 people. 2 officers turned a corner after hearing gunfire and saw a teenager holding a gun standing over someone who was on the ground. The teenager standing with a gun, believed to be 17 or 18, pointed it at police, and one of the officers fired at him. He was fatally wounded. As described, these both sound like perfectly legitimate, justifiable shootings. What do you think? I don't even want to predict this. But and in fact, these stories are not mutually exclusive. The shooting spree is part of what officers were responding to there. Is Chicago going to become Ferguson North? Let's see. And the counter-argument that we've had to these police shootings, black-on-black killing, black-on-black killing, black-on-black killing, and Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson don't seem to give a damn. And Al Sharpton is eulogizing a guy he didn't know from Adam, but that's okay. He's a dead black kid, and that's all Al Sharpton needs to know. He certainly doesn't need to know any type of facts, including how the kid died. Don't confuse him with those. There was a piece in the New York Times yesterday. Actually, it was Saturday that it posted, but I believe it was in Sunday's print editions of New York Times. Key factor in police shootings, reasonable fear. I won't go into detail, but they make the argument that, look, even in a case, if an independent review was to determine that a police shooting wasn't justified, that doesn't mean that the officer is a bloodthirsty, crazed killer. It means given a split-second decision, human beings can be wrong. And put in the pressure cooker situation that many officers are we going to accept, as horrible as the consequences are, that they cannot make an honest mistake under extremely high-pressure situations? I think the answer is they can. Does that mean it should be a blank check for officers to kill people? No. It's a long piece, and I read the entire thing, but essentially the argument is that unless you have been in that situation, you just have no idea. Here's what it comes down to, though, and I've talked about this on the air before. There are two schools of philosophy when it comes to officer-related shootings and just the way police officers act. And this is everything about this debate. There are two schools of philosophy. That police officer safety should be the first priority, or alleged perpetrator safety should be the first priority. There are those who believe, and I'm quite sure Attorney General Eric Holder is among them, that Barack Obama is among them, that many liberals outraged over Ferguson are among them, that officer safety should be secondary to perpetrator safety. That the officer should take every imaginable measure to make sure they don't have to kill someone. I think that's ludicrous. When the St. Louis, don't confuse this with the Ferguson situation, after the Ferguson situation, a St. Louis police officer shot and killed a man with a knife. I got into this brief debate with this woman on Twitter, and then one of my listeners took it over. She said, well, why didn't they tase him? Because deadly force is met with deadly force. A knife is deadly force. A taser is not. This notion that it should be a fair fight is an insane notion. And the notion that the, and I'll say alleged perpetrator safety should have the priority over officer safety is ludicrous. And no, they can't both be priorities. It doesn't work that way. Why? Because this is a life or death situation. Somebody's going to live and somebody's going to die. As a society, when push comes to shove, I'm not saying all the time, but in these situations, when you have a threat to an officer's safety or the safety of others around him, the officer should have a right to defend himself or herself. Again, not a license to kill, but an understanding that citizens have a responsibility not to put an officer in a threatening situation. There seems to be this belief system that if they do, an officer should take every action possible not to kill the person. I disagree. And you have to be clear on this. You cannot have it both ways. No, they should both be priorities. They can't. You either accept policies, procedures, and practices that protect the officer, or policies, procedures, and practices of those who are stupid enough to become engaged with an officer. If you don't want to die, there are steps you can take. If you, the situation with the knife, I am thankful, didn't explode into another controversy down there. I thought it might. If officers are giving an accurate depiction of what happened in Chicago, these are absolutely, completely justified. But in this tinder dry environment that radicals are creating post-Ferguson, who knows what's going to happen in Chicago? What are Al and Jesse going to do? Are they going to swoop down into Chicago and say, here we go again? Are we going to have people holding up their hands in Chicago and what has become a killing zone? Is anybody going to compare and contrast those two officer-related shootings yesterday with the 21 shootings, three fatal, and predominantly, I'm guessing, black on black? Anybody going to do that? Anybody? Anybody? Bueller? It's 10:22.
The Jerry Bader Show.